Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Good to see you again, and welcome back to Path to Abundant Living. I'm Ryan Ruff, your moderator, but as always, I'll be joined by Matt Nordman and Scott Morrison of Morrison Nordman Wealth Management. And of course, we're going to be jumping into another wealth management related discussion here on the show today. We've got a great guest that's going to be joining us for today's discussion, a true expert in their field. Joining us today is Jack Wires, an estate planning attorney over at the Family and Elder Law of Mid-Michigan. Really excited to be bringing Jack in to talk through kind of the intersection of estate planning and wealth management as a whole. If you're a regular listener or viewer on this show, you know, if we've scratched the surface or, you know, taken a dive into different realms of estate planning, but we thought it'd be extremely beneficial to have on a true expert in their craft and Jack on to, you know, address some of the finer points today with some key considerations that business owners should be, factoring into their estate planning efforts. So before we bring Jack on, let's go ahead and say hi to the guys. Matt, Scott, good to see you this morning. How are we doing?
Ryan, great to see you.
Good morning, Ryan.
Professor, how are you today?
I'm great. Ready to
go. Excited about the game today?
And the MSU game?
Yes, the MSU game.
Yeah, not really.
Yeah, just sitting down today. March Madness tipping off today. Excited to obviously watch some basketball. But we got some discussion here ahead. Jack Wires joining us. Matt, why don't you tee it up for us before we bring Jack out here? Why Jack? Why do we want to bring him on? And what are you planning to get into today with him?
It's a great question, Ryan. So Jack is an expert in the estate planning area. And as you know, as you've discussed, we've talked about estate planning issues for a lot of people. They said, well, hey, why not bring an expert on to talk through even more specific issues about what people should or should not be doing? Should I have a trust? Should I not? And there's so many different areas. And as we tell people all the time, we are not allowed to give legal advice. We know enough, but clearly not to the level of someone like Jack. And we said, hey, let's bring him on and ask him some questions.
Fantastic. Well, with that, Jack, I really appreciate you joining us and welcome to Path to Abundant Living.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today, guys. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to the chat.
Excited to have you here. So how does one become an estate planning attorney? Like what's your background?
Okay, so I'm kind of a local kid here. I grew up, my dad was actually a college football coach growing up, and so I kind of bounced around like a military brat when I was a kid. We landed in the Lansing area, and my dad coached at Michigan State for a little while. And he got out of coaching. I got out of college, and we got into a family business together. So I have some experience in a family business. We sold that business in 2007. And along the way, as you might imagine, we'd done business succession planning. We'd done estate planning to kind of keep everything wrapped up in the family and protected. So I decided after we sold the business that I wanted to go to law school at a late age. Did that. The day after I took my law school entrance exam, my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. I was actually aiming at going into gaming law of all things. But going through the disease process with my mom and seeing what just kind of being in that community, seeing the struggles that families had, and just kind of succession, estate planning issues, elder law issues, all those sorts of things, kind of led me to where I'm at today.
Well, and that sort of leads into the next question about why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, yeah. So that's kind of my why is very much related to, I always say I've seen a lot of estate plans where at the most critical times, families kind of get blown apart instead of being pulled together. So that was kind of one of the things that really touched my heart when I watched that. I've also seen some disasters with family businesses, family wealth being squandered, all those kind of things, friends, family, elder abuse from friends, parents and grandparents, all those sorts of things. And I was also a primary caregiver for my mom, dad, and my uncle prior to their passing and helped settle their estates. So all those kind of things, kind of the confluence of those things led me to doing what I'm doing today. So it makes it easy to get up, wake up every morning, come in here and help people solve those issues and so that they have some peace of mind And we make sure that everyone's protected, and we meet the folks that have developed some wealth. We make sure that they can put their head on the pillow every night, knowing that they've got their business taken care of.
So, Jack, I know we're going to ask about success stories, but you kind of touched on some of the issues that you have seen, which are tragic with families and businesses and like you said, kind of squandering the wealth. Are there some things that you have seen or some kind of the horror stories that make sure to avoid these things?
Right, right. You know, we see those often is some of the ones that I always use are kind of the Brady Bunch scenario, when you've got kids from two previous relationships and one spouse passes, they haven't done planning. You know, I always tell the story about, Mike and Carol Brady, if Mike passes, they got married, they got along really well. You can imagine they probably made all their assets jointly titled their assets or made each other beneficiaries on assets. If Mike were to pass, how would Mike's boys feel? Pretty nervous, yeah. Right? Unless Carol does something to protect them. Carol gets remarried, how do Mike's boys feel? Cut out, right? Likely. And how do Carol's girls feel now? If Carol passes after she's remarried, where does Mike's money end up going? And we see those kind of stories all the time. I mean, it just happens because people haven't done planning. And, folks that want to avoid probate, keep their estates out of the public eye. Special needs beneficiaries who can't accept assets without losing their benefits. Family businesses, family farms that haven't been planned for well. People ending up with unintended partners and businesses, or putting the family farm out of business because we haven't taken the time to do the planning to make sure that that's protected. Cottages, property taxes, uncapping on cottages and making making it less affordable to have those cottages, and sometimes pricing the family out of it. The list goes on and on.
So what I'm hearing is, with a little bit of planning and working with someone like you, you can protect your family. So help us see some success stories where you help people avoid these issues this wealth they work so hard for.
Yeah. So, there are a number of different strategies, it's hard to kind of nail those down, but for example, I've got a family right now we just finished up working with who's got a family farm. There's three kids, two of them aren't involved in the farm. And we worked with the advisor to make sure that we've got financial products in place, life insurance policies, things like that, to take care of the non-farming kids so that we can pass the farm on to the son who wants to manage the farm. We've got another family that just built a $3.5 million cottage up on Lake Charlevoix. We've taken steps to make sure that that stays in the family for generations to come without property taxes uncapping. The cottage is endowed so that the parents can lay their head on the pillow knowing that the expenses associated with that cottage will be taken care of, and that it'll stay in the family for generations to come. And I guess just general success stories, and again, kind of the horror stories, is so often we see people who've done trust planning, but there wasn't a lot of follow through or maintenance done, and they end up going to probate anyhow, which is one of the primary reasons you create trusts. So their estates become a bit of a mess, we kind of pride ourselves in taking the time of making sure every box is checked and offering a maintenance plan so that it makes it easy for clients to pick up the phone and call us and not feel like the meter's running, so that we're staying on top of those assets as life changes, because it does change on people, and sometimes people set it and forget it, and that's not necessarily the best thing to do. Other sorts of things, I mean, I guess that we do is that we're really, this is kind of relates more to the elder law piece or incapacity planning, is we take a lot of time having the principles create very specific rules and instructions about how they want to be cared for, how they want their money used, if they need long-term care, if they were to become incapacitated, who's going to act in those roles. And we try to get the family involved so that they understand who's in charge, what mom and dad want to have happen, because those are the situations where we really see a lot of family fighting. It's not so much what's happening with the money, this is what's happening with mom and dad. You know, oftentimes when there's businesses involved, we may want mom to take care of dad's finances if something were to happen to him, but we have somebody else we want to have run the business because the other partners in the business don't want mom to be their partner. So we can resolve a lot of issues. Just as you said, it's the old ounce of prevention thing is that, you know, if you sit down, take a little bit of time, and yeah, it costs a little bit of money and it takes a little bit of time to do this. But generally we can resolve a lot of, if you just hang around with your buddies and you hear about families fighting, most of those things can be avoided.
Jack, I want to double click into something you just mentioned a moment ago. And that was this idea of going back, reviewing, and getting away from that set it and forget it mentality when it comes to estate planning. I would imagine a nice chunk of business owners out there likely have done some sort of estate planning. They've got some sort of foundation going, but talk me through maybe some of the steps that they should be considering with regard to that idea of circling back, reviewing what they have and making sure, you know, what are some of those key areas somebody should be, you know, more actively reviewing as time goes on within their estate plan.
Right. So, you know, we have a general list of things that if they were to happen in your life, you should circle back. I mean, and there are things that, you know, make a lot of sense. So, you know, if you have birth, death, disability, change in marital status in anywhere in the family, somebody is in a car accident, they get harmed. Those kind of things should, you know, those should always be triggers to ask some questions. Hey, do we need to do anything here? You have a change in ownership in a business, you acquire a new business, acquire new property, all those sorts of things. And if none of those things happen, you know, I think every 3 to 5 years, people should just sit down with their advisor, with their estate planner, and just talk through where things are at. Has the law changed? Are there things there? I mean, recently we've had, you know, changes in how retirement plans are handled and you know, the calculus that this is kind of more Matt and Scott's piece, but we can kind of fold it in with trust planning to kind of protect those assets the best we can. But with the advent of the Secure Act and Secure Act 2.0, that's changed a lot. I always say the rule of thumb with estate planners is every 3 years, but I would say at a minimum every 5 years, you should just circle back and take a look.
So you should update just like anything, because like you said, laws are going to change and continuing to change. That's the one constant we all know, right?
Right, right.
So with the Secure Act, as you mentioned, Secure Act 2.0, we have the estate tax changing on January 1st, 2026. And so we have 640-ish days to plan for that.
Right.
Which if you haven't thought about that. So for those that that's going to affect, you know, with Secure Act 2.0 specifically, what necessitates a change to someone's or a review of someone's trust?
Well, you know, I would say not just 2.0, but the original Secure Act, which really changed the rules with, you know, it eliminated the lifetime stretch for many beneficiaries for IRA accounts or qualified accounts. That from on our end was a real game changer, because we had to, you know, really revamp trust structures for existing clients who wanted to downstream those assets to trusts that we've created. And we're big fans of creating kind of dynastic trusts. So we leave assets in trust for kids that are protected and can grow if managed well for future generations. And I know you guys know the statistics about how, you know, generational wealth is squandered if we don't do things like that. But
sleeves,
we really have to change
sleeves.
The calculus of how we do that. You know, things talking to folks, particularly now when you combine that with estate tax law changing. And I saw just yesterday, I got a blitz of emails about Biden's new budget and all the proposals to further restrict estate tax planning. So, you know, I see that on the horizon. I kind of look at it as low hanging fruit. So it doesn't affect that many voters. So, you know, when you combine those things together, things like, and this is more your bailiwick, not mine, but Roth conversions make a ton more sense because we can be more flexible with how we plan with those and protect those for the future generations. Maybe get some wealth out of the estate, but that's a conversation I think needs to be had with the advisor and the estate planner together, which, as you guys know, you know, we want to be hand in hand with the advisor. One of the things that I kind of found when I got into this industry was that estate planners and advisor, financial advisors as a rule, didn't work closely enough together to make sure that clients' needs were being met. And it's one of the reasons I love your guys' philosophy is that, you know, the two of us need to work together, like oftentimes with a CPA, to make sure that we're doing the things the right way to maximize the benefits, protect generational wealth, and leverage the law where we can to do those things.
One of the things, Jack, that my clients often ask me is whether or not, and kind of going circling back to whether they even need a trust. It's easy to see when we're talking about a complex situation where you know it's a no-brainer to talk about, you know, generating a trust. But what about those situations where, let's say, we have a person with basically just qualified accounts who has named beneficiaries, or non-qualified accounts where there's transfer on death designations, where each of those elements kind of avoids the probate situation, maybe other than a home. Is a trust still something that could be a part of their life, and why?
Okay, so let's kind of talk through that. So, you know, I don't think a trust is for everybody. And we always, you know, we have kind of have this question, you know, do I need a will, trust, neither, or both, right? So in operation of law, what you're describing, joint ownership and beneficiary designations, can often do the job. Where things get dicey, I think, Scott, are if we've got situations like the Bradys, right? The Brady family. If we've got minor downstream beneficiaries that are minors, do we want them receiving assets when they're 18 or 21? That might be substantial. Do we want those assets managed post-death? But are there situations? I mean, you know, I had a woman in here yesterday that she's an only child. She has a child and she has one grandchild, and they don't plan on having any more. Grandchild's now 25. We use what we call a Lady Bird deed or enhanced life estate deed on her house to transfer the house to the daughter. There's not a ton of contingency planning required, because that's what I see the real benefit is that while you can name contingent beneficiaries and on a lot of those products, the depth and intricacy that with which you can do that and protections that you can build in the trust often lend to a trust. So, you know, I just say, and obviously I work with people who have very little wealth to people that have a lot of wealth, right? And you know, our mix here is we probably do 15% of our plans are just based on transfer by operation of law via beneficiary designation, Lady Bird deed, those kind of things. And then we've got probably another 15% to do will-based planning. And then probably 70% of the people, after we've gone through all those counseling issues, end up in some sort of trust. And then, you know, as we advance in wealth, if they've got a cottage, we oftentimes use an asset protection cottage trust. If we have folks who have are concerned about long-term care issues. We use common law asset protection trusts to protect assets as it relates to long-term care. You've got professions that are, you know, potentially high liability or lend themselves to litigation. We're using domestic asset protection trusts or common law asset protection trusts, depending on their need for control and access. And then, of course, there's the whole alphabet soup of estate planning, you know, or estate tax planning trusts, the grats, the cruts, the clats, you know, the whole islets, the whole menagerie of those types of trusts. But we also, you know, the other thing that we always want to counsel with folks on is, you know, if they have, is there some tax avoidance and tax maximization things you can do with things like charitable remainder trusts and things like that if people have charitable intent.
I wanted to piggyback on that, Jack, by just saying, you know, just listening to the jargon, the language, and the reason why we feel it's so important to have somebody like yourself on a platform like this, where you mentioned having, you know, that professional network around a client that's working together, because imagine having that from a client's perspective, having that siloed conversation between yourself, ourselves, and that CPA, and then trying to share that information from one professional to the other. You know, I just think that's exactly why it's so important to be proactive in this kind of planning, because it's just from a, you know, especially when somebody comes to you maybe at a later stage in life, this could be really overwhelming. I wonder, how do you go about, you know, counseling that, you know, that client initially, and how to pull the family in when maybe up until this point, the parents haven't been completely open and honest about their wealth with their kids, feeling like maybe it's not time, it's not they're not ready yet for that responsibility. How do you go about bringing that family together to have those discussions?
Well, you know, obviously my you know, what I'm tasked with under my ethics code is to do my client's bidding. But obviously I want to counsel with them and talk to them about kind of the benefits. I mean, the days of, you know, reading the will after the funeral have really gone by, you know, gone by the wayside. We actually had somebody call last week and asked when the reading of the will was going to be. I said, well, we just don't do that anymore. So the way that I typically start is, you know, we bring a client in and we encourage them, you know, right off the bat, if you've got family members that, you know, you think are going to be involved in this plan, let's talk to them. Because even if it's just someone acting as their patient advocate designation, or their patient advocate under their patient advocate designation, there are many things that are required by law of that person. And people will kind of willy-nilly just assign the oldest kid, the next kid, and the kid after that, after a spouse. We really want to counsel with them and get those people involved so that they make sure, A, the family's not fighting. So we tell them some of these horror stories about not communicating with the family. And frankly, there are families that just say, yeah, we're just not ready to do that. But we encourage them to, in our initial meetings with them, is, you know, we talk to them about design as generally as we can. And I'll be frank with you, a lot of times people leave here with their eyes rolling around in their head because of the jargon and the opportunities, the extent. I mean, estate planning is typically a little bit more complex than what most people think it might be. But we always talk to them about building plans that's going to pull the family together, preserve what they've worked so hard for, and make sure that they're cared for the way they want to be cared for if they can't care for themselves. And that generally will loosen them up a little bit to getting the family involved. You know, they start to gain an understanding of what happens. Because what I usually ask them is like, hey, do any of us want the kids to fight? And the answer there is generally no. You know, we just don't want that. And sometimes we have kids that are estranged. I mean, I see that more and more often all the time, is we've got estranged kids, and how do we deal with them, which can be tricky also. you know, I just, we just really encourage people to leave very detailed instructions and communicate it with the family. Because as you might imagine, we hate to see families fighting. I had my dad had a brother that, I mean, they, my dad went to his grave and they still weren't talking, and that kind of sits in my craw, you know, I hate to see those things happen, but there are times, in fact, Michigan just recently, last month, passed a bill that now allows us to have silent trusts that last 25 years. So if we don't want the beneficiaries to know, we can keep it away from them for 25 years. So, you know, but there's a lot of flexibility, a lot of different things we can do to deal with different people. So
right.
we can do that.
What I'm hearing is there's a lot of things that people should be contacting you about, but how many times do they think, I don't really have much complexity. I have my family, and maybe there is a second marriage or multiple kids from multiple marriages. And they're like, we'll be fine. Do you find that with situations like that, or business owners thinking, my situation really isn't that complex? And then you start asking them questions and discussing some of that jargon, like you said, do you see that often?
All the time, Matt. All the time. I mean, we get the phone call, which is this kind of, it makes us cringe as they'll call up, and because obviously, you know, first of all, I don't think people would wake up in the morning and say, hey, I want to go see an attorney, right? so we check that box off. And the second one is they're just like, I just need a will, because they don't want to see an attorney's bill either, right? So they'll call our office and say, hey, I just need a will. I don't want to talk about anything else. I just need a will. And, you know, what we tell them is we have a duty to tell you all the things in the potential pitfalls are there. We're not trying to sell you anything, but we have to counsel you if we bring you in here. You know, one of the stories that I tell is that I have a family whose mother's been, it's the kid, the dad passed, the mom's alive. She had about $1 million in assets. Went to Dobie Road for long-term care 5 years ago, and she's now whittled that down to about 600,000. So the kids came in and said, is there a way for us to stop the bleeding? And I said, yeah, we can get her qualified for Medicaid and protect about $400,000 of those assets using the Medicaid rules. Two very unfortunate things happened. One is the financial power of attorney was so limiting that we weren't able to do the planning. So I had to say, we can't help you. And mom's lost her capacity, so she can't change it. So that was one piece. The other piece is they asked us, well, if we'd have come to you when she still had her capacity and she still had her $1 million, what could we have done? And I didn't even really want to answer that question, because we could have protected much more of the money for the family. But I, you know, the question that I got to ask the clients, and I ask them this on balance, is, you know, if you were in a situation like that, do you want to spend all the money on your care, or would you prefer to try to protect those assets for your kids? And the client gives me that answer. I don't provide that answer for them. But if I don't counsel them on all those issues, so you might have somebody that comes into the office, and you guys will, this will make you guys cringe, but they'll walk into my office and they have a house. They've got $300,000 in the bank, right? And they've got $100,000 in a qualified account, but they live their life. You know, their bank account keeps growing because they live frugally. And there's things that we can do to protect assets, and, you know, prevent their lifelong savings from being squandered. And we would typically then tell them to call somebody like Scott and Matt or another financial advisor and talk about why they've got $300,000 in the bank too. But it's a duty that we have to make them aware. But what generally happens is, you know, those folks end up thinking, wow, I hadn't really thought through all these issues. And then they do much more comprehensive planning.
So along those lines, which you brought up, is there a range that people can expect to pay for estate planning work to be done? Because there's so much out there. And you know, it's, oh, it's a DIY, you can use LegalZoom,
right?
But again, you get what you pay for.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, we always tell, you know, most people don't want to end up in the probate court while they're in living probate, going through a guardianship or conservatorship, or going through probate if they haven't done planning, and let the state decide who's in charge, who gets the benefit, and when. So doing DIY planning, you know, we always tell folks it's oftentimes better than nothing, but sometimes it's worse than nothing. From a cost standpoint, you know, what Scott described, if we have somebody come in who's got a situation like the woman I described to you the other day, and we do what we call a ladybird deed on the house, we do a deed of gift on their tangible personal property, make sure that all their beneficiary designations are correct, and we do a set of powers of attorney, they may walk out the door for, it may have cost them $1,000. If we've got a business owner who wants to use an asset protection trust and has a cottage and four kids, and we want to make sure that the cottage is managed the right way, you know, you might get up in the $8,000 to $10,000 range. I looked at our average engagement, and we look at it every week in a meeting, and our average engagement right now is around $4,000. So I guess that the best way I can answer that question, Matt.
Well, that's perfect. But that $4,000, many times, if not all the time, you really couldn't even put a price on that. I understand you're putting the $4,000 price tag on it, but the amount of money and potential tax savings down the road, as well as the peace of mind, knowing that what they want to have happen will actually happen.
Right. So it's interesting you say that. So I used to, and I don't, it got taken down when we redid my office, but I had behind me where I'm sitting right now, you can't see it because of the background, but I had a picture of a woman in a hammock holding onto a margarita on the beach, right? And next to it, I had a picture of a 2007 Malibu. And I said, which one of these is more important to you? Right? And they'd look at the picture and they'd like, that's way more important than a 2007 Malibu. And I said, this is going to cost you about what a 2000, that peace of mind will cost you about what a 2007 Malibu does. And then when we look at, and I mean, you guys are aware of this, you know, generational wealth is typically squandered. I think the stat is 1.8 generations and it's gone. And are there, you know, when we can show them ways that they can protect that wealth, grow it, and pass it down through the generations, you know, that few thousand dollars that they spend can be incredibly powerful. So, you know, and obviously I'm a big believer that I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're the things that we can do and the tools that we can use, to leverage the tax code, bring the family together, and create situations where we can grow family wealth. I mean, it's, you know, obviously I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think it was worth the bucks they got to part with to do it.
Hey, Jack.
No, it's very important.
Just to piggyback on that last question, you know, there's obviously those folks who have taken that plunge financially in that kind of an engagement that you've described. What about those who come to you to say, I need it reviewed, or maybe only need to have an amendment done as a result of some changes to tax law or whatever the, you know, case might be? What would somebody come to expect in that kind of a scenario?
So I think right now, and I don't have my fee schedule in front of me, we charge $550 to do a comprehensive estate plan review.
Okay.
So, but if we're doing amendments, so, you know, that becomes kind of an interesting endeavor, because, you know, I'll have people come to me with a trust that doesn't look anything. It's not structured at all like mine. And so I always tell folks, depending on the amount of surgery I have to do, and I've got to be able to put my name behind the amendment. So if I'm not comfortable with the existing trust, we may just restate it if we have the ability to do so and put it in our format. And then if we do that, we have a standard fee. I try to work on fixed fees as much as I can, so the client knows what their out the door price is, so they know what the Malibu costs, right, before they leave.
Right.
But if it's, you know, do these kind of one-off amendments and things like that, we charge our hourly fees. And, you know, for a small amendment, you know, you're changing beneficiary structure slightly, or you had a child that passed, or, you know, just small trustee succession changes, or agency succession changes in your powers of attorney, we charge by the hour. But I mean, I would say on average, those are all usually less than $1,000 to do those.
Okay.
So again, well worth the money.
Yeah.
If nothing else, to come in and have a conversation, because you're going to ask questions that will elicit responses that they didn't even know that they should be thinking about.
Right. So we, you know, we used to always make these jokes as you got, you know, the barbershop and the beauty shop rules. And most people know 80% of what you need to know about estate planning, but it's what they don't know. It's that other 20% where the real opportunity lies, and the opportunities to avoid bad things or take advantage of good things.
Yeah. So, which again, you're keeping up to date on that, and you're doing this all day, every day. And this is I don't want to say once in a lifetime, but the estate plan creation is the first thing, then the ongoing maintenance. But a lot of people don't think about all the questions that issue and the issues that come up that you're going to bring up and help them see through.
Right. Right. And our initial meeting here is usually pretty fairly structured. And so that, you know, as you might imagine, so that we're walking them through all those questions. And, you know, in a lot of cases, they may just be, yeah, it just doesn't apply here. Doesn't apply here. Doesn't apply here. Oh, here's one. And that's, you know, then we have to kind of explore and exploit those opportunities. So,
well, Jack,
so,
given
and the one thing that I would, you know, kind of, just I would add just generally is just kind of relationally how these things work is, and I know Matt, you and Scott, you and I, we've all talked about this is, you know, I'm a big fan of, as I said, I kind of mentioned this earlier is that, you know, I've seen there divisive relationships between estate planning attorneys and financial advisors, and it just doesn't make sense to me. And I know you guys have seen the stats and done the research that people expect their financial advisor to be the person who's going to be the quarterback, very much not just as it relates to their assets, but kind of all the things that surround their assets. So that, you know, you're their go-to guy. And we just espouse that piece is that, you know, an advisor is a person who can, you know, who meets with a client regularly, who can identify these kind of things. When the asset mix changes, when these things happen in the family, they usually know. So we're just huge fans of having being closely tied to the advisor, letting them be the quarterback of the situation. And, you know, as they work with clients, bringing us in when they see fit and getting us connected with folks. I think it just probably happens. And you guys can tell me this, where somebody comes in and says, hey, I need to get my, or when you're talking with them, hey, I need to get my estate planning done. Do you have an estate planner that I can work? You know, an estate planner I can work with. You know, it's rarer when a client walks into my office and says, do you have a financial advisor I can work with? You know, because they're usually working with someone already. But I, you know, I'm just a huge fan of the idea that people can access, and advisors make estate planning accessible through their practice. So I'm happy to see that you guys are doing that too. I guess, you know, I think that's a great thing and a great service that you guys are providing for clients by being able to connect them with folks like me.
Well, we appreciate that. We just see, yeah, like Scott mentioned earlier, there are so many professionals that people will go see and they get that siloed information. They come to see Jack, and I know it's not yours, but they'll see the estate planning attorney who will say, okay, now go see the CPA. And then the CPA says, go see your insurance person. And the insurance person says, go see the financial advisor, who then sees. And the people take good notes, but maybe it's like Scott will allude to, it's like that old telephone game when you'd play when you're a kid.
Right. Right.
And it's, you're getting a different view of everything that's happening
that
instead of everybody
story
sitting around the table.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's great to work with folks that understand how closely tied we all need to be. And as my dad used to say, singing out of the same hymnal, right?
There you go.
Well, Jack, given the sheer number of variables at play within estate planning, not just setting up the plan, but of course going through that maintenance we talked about, for anybody out there in our audience that would like to look you, your team up online, learn more, maybe even find you guys and open up a dialogue, what would be the best way somebody can connect with you guys?
The best way is probably just pick up the phone and call. Our phone's 517-351-6222. You can visit our website and connect with us there. It's www.thewordfamily-elder-law.com. So family-elder-law.com. So, and we're
Fantastic.
always happy to help. I really appreciate you guys having me on today.
Of course, of
Hey,
course. Well, yeah, thanks again for sharing your expertise. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Appreciate it very much, Jack.
Yeah,
All
thank you,
right.
Jack.
Thanks, guys. Go green.
All right, folks, fantastic. Well, Jack Wires again joining us from Family Elder Law of Mid-Michigan. So appreciate him and his time and expertise, of course, today. Guys, a lot there. Jack works in the trenches, knee deep with families going through the estate planning process, which it's never easy. It's not an easy conversation to have about what happens, later in life when maybe tragedy strikes or different, sad moments and can happen, but it's important stuff. So, Matt, why don't you bat lead off here? What were some of your key takeaways from the conversation?
He knows a lot. And if you think your situation isn't complex, you might be correct, but you're better off in having someone like Jack take you through the process to say, you're good. You don't need to make any changes, right? It's the question we ask, are you 100% confident that the plan you have in place today is going to get you where you want to be and what you want to have happen? Is going to happen. And if you're not 100% confident, call Jack or call someone that's on your team to have that second opinion, that stress test, because we don't know what we don't know. And so you have someone come in and ask you certain questions that, again, you just didn't even know that you should be addressing.
Amen to that. And Scott, what was one of your, big takeaways from the conversation?
I think everybody's knee-jerk reaction to being, recommended to an attorney is the first thing they think of, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, is what's this going to cost me? And, having Jack, like ourselves, say, yeah, this is a professional and you're going to get professional help. And if it's going to save you 10 times the fees in terms of what could potentially go wrong in an estate plan, you've really got to ask yourself, that, and Matt and I talk about this all the time, cost is really only an issue in the absence of value. And it just speaks again to me, how important it is to have all your ducks in a row when it comes to this kind of planning.
Sure
And I
thing.
would say, Scott, if you would say 10 times, it might be 100 times.
Oh yeah, easy.
Like, he's talking about someone spending, 4,000, 5,000, 10,000. I mean, you're potentially saving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars for
Well, and it's just
really
going to have to
pennies
be
on the dollar.
it just has to be part of your everyday, thought pattern when it comes to your financial planning, because, we can't have control over what goes on in Congress and whether or not a SECURE Act gets passed and how that, if that happens a week after your first trust is put together, well, it might mean you're going to have to go back in the second week and look at it again.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's funny. This conversation is timely for me, not specifically because I'm going through a estate planning process myself, but I'm dealing with a leaky roof at my house. And it reminds me, the estate planning process is reminding me of what I'm dealing with my roof. So we've got water damage that's starting to find its way into the home. And there's a few different routes you can go. I can slap a Band-Aid on it. I can cover, recoat the roof and put that Band-Aid down so that way, everything looks good on paper. We don't see the rain coming in for a little bit of time until that wears away, and then maybe we can sell it. But the thing is when an inspector comes through, takes a look at my roof, when we do ultimately go to sell the house down the road, they're going to see the issues. So it's one of those, if I don't address it now, I'm going to have to address it later. And when I address it later, it's going to cost me 10, 100X, just like you just mentioned, Matt. So funny that today's conversation is kind of parallel with what I'm dealing with right now here as a, as a homeowner.
It's but you're exactly right that if you address it now, hit it straight on, you will be better off down the road. But like Scott alluded to, most people, if they were to admit it, oh, what's this going to cost?
Right. And I'm talking about a roof here, not, family's estate plan, infinitely more important, infinitely more valuable to not just the matriarch or patriarch, but the family as a whole. I mean, maybe many generations down the road that aren't even born yet, perhaps. I mean, this is a massively important conversation in somebody's life that they shouldn't treat like it's a, it's just a painful expense, one that I don't want to have to make. I love that line you just, you guys mentioned that there's, what was it, Scott, about the, there's no conversation about cost unless there's an absence of value. I love that. I think it's a great line, really a great line that we could all take away from today's conversation. So really good stuff. But guys, I mean, you're having conversations like these with clients, whether it's around estate planning or any, realm of their wealth management as a whole on a regular basis. You're referring, you guys, we preach it on this show, and that's working with that team of professionals, Jack being one of those members of that team of professionals. For anybody out there in today's conversation, that listened or watched today's episode and they're recognizing, and, maybe I'm not ready, or I don't know I'm ready to have a conversation with the estate planning attorney, and I should talk with a wealth manager ahead of time to see where I stack up with regard to this conversation as a whole, what would be the best way somebody could open up a dialogue with you guys and get the ball rolling?
Traditional way, pick up the phone, 517-333-7967, or go to our website, Morrison Nordman, with two N's on the end, .com. And schedule a get to know you call. And what we're going to do is ask you some questions about, again, what is it that you want to have happen? Because there are so many aspects of wealth management. The investment consulting is part of it, but you really need to look at that advanced planning that Jack and others like him, other professionals, can help. Because the whole goal, as we say, is wealth management is what we do. But what we're known for is helping you and your family get to the point where you can spend and give fearlessly.
I love it. Well, guys, I really appreciate you both and your time. Obviously, we thank Jack for his time, but looking forward to being back on the next one with you and diving into another great topic.
Ryan, as always, great to see you. Have a great day. Scott, see you very soon.
All right. Will do.
Thanks, fellas. And hey, look, ladies and gents, we're going to take a final moment here and thank you for being with us on the show today. If you learned a thing or two from Jack Wires or our guys, you benefited from the conversation in any way, shape, or form, make sure you hit that subscribe button on the platform you checked us out on today so that you don't miss out on any future conversations like these, where whether it's Matt, Scott, and I, or we bring a great guest on, we're trying to unpack these really important concepts surrounding your financial world, and we want to make sure we provide value to you. So by being subscribed to the show, you won't miss out on any of that great stuff. Before Scott and Matt, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long now, but again, we appreciate you being with us on Path to Abundant Living.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors. Morrison Nordman and Associates and Securities America are separate entities. All investing involves risk, including the possible risk of principal.